Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
There are some jurisdictions around the world that are progressing throughout that direction. But Hong Kong, if they do approve for Bitcoin and Ether ETF at the same time, that would certainly be a first around various different jurisdictions in the world.
Sometimes I get caught up in what's going on in the United States, especially since the SEC continues to bring enforcement actions against crypto firms who have ties to the US. And there's been no clear legislation or rule set forth for the industry. And I think anyone who's following what's going on in the industry can feel the frustration from crypto firms who have had to deal with the regulator. But when I look at what's going on in the rest of the world, it seems like crypto adoption and regulation is moving forward at a much faster pace. South Korea just had an election that could have a pretty big impact on the future of crypto adoption in the country, which is already very accepting of crypto. Sean Lee is chief APAC analyst at the Crypto Council for Innovation. He says that 10% of people in Korea own crypto, which I think is pretty impressive. We touch on what's driving retail interest and what the winning party promises in terms of regulation and products. We didn't only talk about South Korea, though. We had to hop over to Hong Kong because some pretty significant news came out this morning. According to Bloomberg, there could be a spot Bitcoin and spot Ether ETF in Hong Kong as soon as Monday. And a Matrix Port report said that these ETFs could unlock up to $25 billion in demand, which is pretty massive. I asked Sean what this means for investors in mainland China and got his opinion on what Asia Pacific regions we should all be watching next. I'm really excited for us to take a listen to this interview, so let's go. Sean Lee, welcome to First Mover.
Well, thank you for inviting me. Good to see you.
Of course, good to see you too. Now, we are talking all about APAC on today's show, and I want to talk about South Korea first. There was a recent election there, an interesting outcome to that election. Why don't you start by laying the foundation for us and just give us a little bit of insight into what led up to the election and what happened?
Yeah, so South Korea, as many may know, has been quite a community or ecosystem in terms of crypto, right? Crypto users. Many analytics and many data have shown that roughly about 10% of the overall population actively own or trade crypto. That's quite a number, 10%. So what that really means is if you look across the board, Korea continues to be one of the countries that have the highest trading volume, from a per capita perspective. So crypto usage is quite active, and it has been for some time. Now, from a regulatory perspective, however, given the fact that there were some fairly large-scale domestic projects like Terra Luna and whatnot that have gone obviously not brought a lot of negative light for the industry and for the general public. So the regulators have naturally been very cautious in terms of allowing for crypto to take on more of an importance from a local economy perspective. Now, things have slowly been opening up, especially as it relates to how other regional players like Japan, Singapore, Hong Kong have been very progressive towards crypto regulation. So the South Korea authorities have certainly been opening up as well. Now, to to kind of answer your question earlier about the election that happened earlier this week, certainly right before the election, both parties have been quite active in a sense, wooing the crypto community. Now, the reason for that is obviously the crypto community tends to be roughly around kind of the 20-ish age range, and that makes up for quite a bit of the local population. So both parties have been making various pledges as it relates to kind of taxation, as well as kind of ownership of crypto and ETF as well, the availability of ETF as well. So it remains to be seen what will happen now that the election is over, and whether politicians will certainly keep to their pledges. But certainly that could spell a fairly drastic move from a regulatory perspective in terms of how South Korea views crypto as an industry moving forward.
Well, tell me a little bit about the party who won the election. This is the opposition party, the Democratic Party. What were their views on crypto? What were some of the pledges that they made?
Yeah, so the DPK, right, the Democratic Party of Korea, have been pretty vocal in regards to the support for spot Bitcoin ETF more specifically, and then also looking at reforming the taxation around crypto gains. And to be honest, both parties are somewhat similar in that regard. The only difference being the opposition party is pledging to move the taxation regime or the elimination of the current regime up to a much earlier time frame, and thereby allowing crypto users to enjoy a bit more of the ownership kind of benefits from that perspective. And then obviously from a Bitcoin ETF side, if you actually look across Asia Pacific, currently, only Hong Kong and Australia allow for in-country launch of spot virtual asset ETF, Bitcoin being one of them. Korea, as well as several other jurisdictions, have not publicly announced that the in-country support of launching spot ETFs. So part of the pledge for the opposition party is also the allowance of in-country, in-country launch of these ETF products, and thereby making the ownership of virtual assets, especially as it relates to some of the larger virtual assets like Bitcoin and Ethereum potentially, much more accessible to the retail while still going through the regulatory regime that has been in place for the banking and securities industry in the country. So this is widely a directions that that both parties have been going on, but obviously the opposition party have been very aggressive in pushing the timeline as well as making progressive pledges in that regard.
I've spoken to analysts, not on this show, on the Markets Daily show for CoinDesk, who have said that the meme coin rallies are largely led by Korean traders, Korean retail traders. What does that tell us about Korean traders?
The Korea crypto community is largely a retail-driven one. If you look across the last few years of new token launches across the world, really, anytime a Korean exchange accepts the listing of such token, there is a dramatic increase in volume, sometimes in a positive direction, sometimes in a negative direction. But regardless, there's usually a dramatic and significant increase in trading volume for that particular token. So that shows you there is a tremendous amount of retail appetite. As I mentioned before, roughly about 10% of the population owns crypto. And this is not just Bitcoin and Ethereum. This really goes across from other large cap virtual assets, as well as meme coins, as you mentioned as well. So it's roughly been it's a very interesting market from that perspective. And obviously from a consumer investor protection perspective, regulators are very keen on making sure that mistakes of the past don't get repeated again. And thereby the potential launches of a product of ETF, wrapped around virtual assets, obviously, like I mentioned before, will follow existing rules that have been put in place and thereby better protects the consumers and investors while giving the society more accessible access towards these new digital asset class. So that's really what we're seeing now in a jurisdiction like South Korea.
Sean, tell me what it is about South Korea that is making young people look more and more to crypto. Like you said, 10% is a pretty big number. It's mostly folks in their 20s and 30s. What is it about Korea where people are looking to alternatives to their financial system?
I've got to be a little bit careful here because I don't want to be stereotyping a particular country. But you know, speculative investment is not new, right? In Korea, it is certainly something that is widely accepted. Everyone knows there's a certain level of risk that are involved. But as a society, I think the type of alternative assets, and some tend to be a little bit riskier other than others, than like crypto assets, are quite widely adopted, especially given the last few years. And like I mentioned before, there were a number of projects that were very prominent in the crypto space that were originated domestically in Korea. So that increased significantly the interest in this particular asset class, and thereby, you know, the wider adoptions from especially from the younger demographics that are jumping into this phase. So I think the you know, given what has happened and given, you know, quite frankly, the last 12 months, South Korea have enacted a number of different protectionary measures, as well as disclosure requirements. I mean, last year there was a case with a project called WeMix, where there were several prominent politicians that had some ownership of the tokens, and there were incidents that have happened, and that basically pushed for a disclosure requirement now, that the South Korea, you know, government officials do need to publicly announce their disclosure in crypto assets. So these are the type of things that are really happening, and so you see the groundswell interest from a consumer perspective. But at the same time, you see the government really trying to, you know, make sure that consumer protection measures are being put in place, and thereby they can continue to allow the digital asset and crypto industry to flourish in country as well as abroad as well.
Okay, I want to turn to Hong Kong now, because some news came out of Bloomberg this morning that said we could have a spot Bitcoin and spot Ether ETF in Hong Kong as soon as Monday. And this sounds very exciting for the region, given how it was accepted in the United States. Tell me a little bit about what's led up to the potential for this ETF to be approved in a matter of days.
Yeah, certainly. So it's a matter of days, but those of us that have been following, it's a matter of months in which the regulator in Hong Kong have been very aggressively pushing towards this agenda. Now, most of it actually originated from a circular that the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, the SEC equivalent essentially, have announced at the end of December last year in 2023. And that basically allows for authorized funds with exposure to virtual assets and thereby spot virtual asset ETFs. So this has been several months in the making. And as soon as that circular was announced at the end of last year, there have been a number of asset managers that have really jumped into the foray, right? So they were all very interested in understanding what that means, but also more importantly, in starting to prepare what it would look like to launch something like a Bitcoin ETF. Now, the number of applicants, as we have seen, have actually increased quite a bit. I think the appetite and obviously the visibility of the successes of the U.S. spot Bitcoin ETFs have certainly dramatically increased the interest of launching such product here in Hong Kong as well. So it is not surprising to see the number of applicants. And it's also not quite surprising to see the SFC, after roughly about 4 months from the circular, to actually come out and say, okay, we may be ready to go. Now, keep in mind, this was a Bloomberg reporting, so this is not the SFC coming out saying they're going to be ready to go. And typically, as you can imagine, regulators won't announce things ahead of time. They will do so after the fact. So it remains to be seen whether it is Monday or, you know, or other days at which these amendments may be made. But certainly, I do understand and believe that the regulator have been preparing for this for some time. And we will see whether these announcements come into the foray. Now, one more thing, if I may add, the launch of Bitcoin ETF is not a surprise. The addition of Ether or ETH into the launch plan, that indeed could be a surprise, right? Obviously, as we know, in the US, such approval has not gone through yet. And there are some jurisdictions around the world that are progressing throughout that direction. But Hong Kong, if they do approve for Bitcoin and Ether ETF at the same time, that would certainly be a first around various different jurisdictions in the world.
I think you're right to bring that up, right? Over here in the United States, we really thought that there was going to be an approval of a spot Ether ETF in May. And now even the applicants who are waiting for that approval are saying it's very unlikely. There's been little engagement from the SEC over here. And Sean, I have to tell you, I said that this was very exciting and it feels like a matter of days because in the US, it took 10 years from the first applicant to get the approval. Yes. And so this feels like it is very quickly moving when we compare it to what's going on in the US. Now, a question I have for you about this Bitcoin ETF is that it's going to be available to investors living in mainland China, right, through the Connect program. And so what does this mean? You know, I think for most of us sitting over here in North America, we know that China has a ban on crypto, but there are ways for Chinese investors to get access and trade tokens. And so now the availability of this ETF, do you expect a lot of demand to come from mainland China?
I think that's certainly the hope for many of the fund managers that are going through the process right now. And maybe I'll say one thing about the crypto scene in China. China has certainly banned crypto mining as well as off-ramping into the traditional regulated banking system. The ownership of crypto is not banned, right? There actually have been multiple cases last year in different provinces where there were legal precedents in terms of owning digital assets and being recognized as property, right? So the ownership of crypto is actually not banned. Now, the regime in Hong Kong, both for the ETF as well as the regular kind of a VATP or virtual asset trading platform regime, actually does not restrict it to only Hong Kong citizens. Anyone can KYC through these regulated entities and regulated platforms to gain access to various different virtual asset products. So in that sense, if we do have mainland Chinese investors going through the proper channels, with the funds in place that's already in Hong Kong, not through China, then they will get access to these products, either through a regulated traditional financial product like an ETF, or getting access to that through the virtual asset trading platforms. So there is certainly that hope that there will be a lot of appetite in gaining access to this and thereby driving up the demand for such products. But there's also one thing in the Hong Kong regulation that actually differentiated from other jurisdictions as well. And I believe Bloomberg and or Reuters might have reported this a couple months back, but that is the notion where the ETF specifically will allow for in-kind subscription. That means if you do own Bitcoin today and you want to swap it into the equivalent units in an ETF that will be hopefully launched soon, you are able to do that, right? So that's a very different approach than in the US or other places where it is an in-cash approach, right? So you have to use cash to buy into these products, just like any other mutual fund potentially that you need to buy. So again, that may increase a different type of appetite for people that already own these assets and looking to put them into a more compliant financial product. And thereby that will also increase the demand for these products once they're launched in Hong Kong.
Sean, I appreciate you explaining to me, who's sitting over in the United States, exactly how crypto is advancing over in Asia Pacific. The last question I have for you is, what do you think is going to be the next big region when it comes to crypto in Asia?
I think various different jurisdictions are all looking to be quite progressive. And typically, when I look across the Asia Pacific region, I would look at Japan, Singapore, and Hong Kong being very progressive and have been providing clarity around various different aspects of digital assets, whether it has to do with custody or stablecoin or virtual asset trading exchanges and whatnot. So these three jurisdictions are certainly a bit more ahead, I would say, than other jurisdictions in Asia in that regard. With that said, we just talk about South Korea, potentially a change in the leadership party may push things forward in that regard. And then we also look at places like Australia, Thailand, Vietnam. They're also moving ahead with various different rules and procedures as well. So I think these three jurisdictions, again, Japan, Singapore, Hong Kong, have been leading the pack. Many other parts of the region are monitoring very closely, adding in their own regional specific characteristics and requirements. So as a whole, I think you will see Asia especially given the demographics of having a rising middle class, fairly young kind of demographics, especially in the Southeast Asia region, much more of the crypto activities and thereby regulation will continue to take place in these areas. And again, led by these three jurisdictions that are a bit more ahead, especially given the more traditional financial and capital market centers that they have had over the last few decades.
Sean, thanks so much for joining the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.